This podcast is brought to you by Upcase. Improve your development skills by completing coding exercises that are peer-reviewed by real humans. Learn more at upcase.com.
How do we want to do this? We've never done this before. I don't know.
We just wait? Because yesterday when I was like waiting for my talk, like I was standing there, like I was ready like 10 minutes ago, and then I was waiting, oh, is someone going to come tell me you can start now, or do I just start? And then I waited 10 minutes and I still don't know, and I don't know who to ask, so I just like asked the audience if we should start, and the audience said yes, so we started. So maybe we can just like wait 10 minutes at the beginning of the podcast. And
then, like, audience, can we start? Like, yeah.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Derek. Hi, Godfrey.
Hello.
We got to do a... What's the old show where they, like, goodnight from all the different windows and they're turning off the lights? Was that a Brady Bunch thing? It was something.
I don't know. We'll insert crickets there. I have no idea.
I'm Canadian. Well, didn't even grow in Canada, but I'm guessing I didn't watch that show.
So how'd your talk go, Godfrey?
I survived.
I heard it was really, really, really good. Somebody said you were one of the best speakers they've seen, so I think it went well. People, I think you did more than survive.
People are very kind.
What did you talk about?
So the title of the talk is Prying Open the Black Box, and everyone thought it's about Pry, but I didn't actually talk about Pry. Basically, just like demystifying what I actually do when I fix Rails bugs, because I really don't think I'm doing anything different than what most people do when they fix a bug in the apps, and like I think most people don't realize that. So I basically just, you know, walk through some of the things that I use, which is probably the same things that you use, and the whole point of the talk is to line up the two things and make it obvious that the only barrier is probably a psychological barrier, not a technical one. So you can, like, you know, if you notice something weird in your app and you think it's a Rails bug, you can actually dig into that and like figure out whether it's a Rails bug or not, and maybe you can even fix it. So right. That's pretty much the premise of the talk.
And you're a very prolific open source contributor, right? You're on the core team of Canada.
I'm on the core team of Canada, yes, yeah. Correct.
What is the core team?
So
back up a minute.
I wrote a gem called Canada that lets you program in Canadian accent.
It lets you what?
It lets you program in Canadian accent.
Oh, okay. All right.
So like all the predicate methods have A at the end of them. Yeah. And all of the exceptions get sorry put in front of them.
There's been some conversation in our office around like how do you pronounce predicate methods, and so somebody started saying like you should say huh. So it'd be like admin, huh? And so I was like, I don't really like that. It sounds like you're coughing. So why don't we say like admin, eh?
Yeah, so that's the other gem that you're talking about. That's the Southern gem, I think.
Yeah, because that's an interesting thing.
But yeah, sorry for derailing the conversation.
Why are you apologizing? You're not even Canadian.
Only Canadians are allowed to apologize. Yeah. Americans certainly don't apologize.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So are you implying that Rails has bugs?
It's surprisingly, as it might sound, yeah, sometimes Rails has bugs.
Wow.
So what are, like, we talked a little bit last week on our episode, actually, about, like, our favorite debugging techniques. And one of the things I said is, like, I rely on reading source code a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I don't go to documentation very much because I don't trust it in Ruby. Or I don't have ready access to it as I do the source code, because I can just, like, bundle open the source and start looking, right? So, like, that's my technique, is I will just go in and, like, if I suspect it's a problem in Rails, I'll bundle open Rails. I'll be like, meh. The hardest thing for me is finding the area where the method I'm actually interested in lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I find that, and then I just throw a breakpoint in there. And I'm like, what's going on in here? Is that what you're up to as well?
I think you basically just gave my talk in the last 30 seconds.
Oh, great. So
if you have not seen a talk yet, you don't have to wait for it because you already heard it.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I think it is interesting. It's like, I think a lot of people are afraid of like crossing that barrier from their app to like library code, when in reality, like, it's all just Ruby code that you can probably read. Like, Rails is like a little obfuscated because of how big it is and how broken down into modules it is and stuff. But
it depends on what part, too. Like, most people have a much easier time in, say, typecasting code than association code, right? I mean, like, that, especially when you get into, like, the join dependency graph and stuff like that, that's just, yeah. But...
Sure. I, like, if I sounded very quiet, it's because I just realized I've been nodding a lot, but I realize that doesn't translate to anything on the microphone. So I need to figure out what's the audio equivalent of.
Yeah, you say,
Okay. I'll keep doing that for the rest of the episode. Keep going.
No, but it's like, I mean, like you're saying in your talk, right? Rails is a large legacy code base.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the normal strategies that you have for working with that, which a lot of people do, because, I mean, that's what we work on in our apps most days for a lot of people, and those strategies still apply.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you work on during the day when you're like, what is it that leads you to Rails bugs to solve?
Usually, I find most of the Rails bugs when I'm working on like client apps or my own apps. Usually, like, I try to do something and that didn't work, and I was like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to know this stuff, so I try to figure out, and then, oh, well, actually, that is either not very nice or that's just wrong, right? Like, so, and then I go complain on Campfire and see if anyone gave good reason of the existing behavior, and if not, then it's probably a bug, then I'll add that to my list and eventually fix it. So I guess that's how I started, and that's still how I, like, I don't do a lot of need to go into this piece of code and, like, refactor it or, like, check the performance on it. Like, that's what Sean and Aaron does a lot, but people do different stuff on a team, and it's good to have like a mix on the team, right? Like, I just use Rails, and then, like, I find things that annoys me. Oh, actually, when I was doing my talk, like, I found a few things that was like, for example, when I don't know if you know about this, when you do Rails new, you can do --def, and it would generate like a def setup that basically has the gem file points to like your Rails checkout. So you can, like, it's for basically for developing Rails with an app to test it, right? Like, and one of the foot guns in there is that, well, Rails 4.2, obviously that ships with Spring, but then whenever you change any library code or Rails code, you have to restart your server and restart Spring. So for that setup, the Spring gem is probably hurting more than helping. So maybe we should just not put Spring in there for the dev setup, and then no one objected, so it did that. And same thing for, we have this thing called bug report templates, which is basically just boilerplate code for you to quickly write a single test case for, like, add active record or like a controller. So it's like a full Rails app in like one file, or a full active record setup in one file. So I wanted to talk about that, but I realized when, like, you're not working on active record or controller bugs, it's still nice to have that setup, but we don't have that. So I added like a generic bug report template for that. So I guess, like, it's basically paying attention to the little things that annoy you when you work, and fix those little things, and that's what I do for the most part.
Yeah, the --dev thing I definitely did not know about. So it's a way, like, when I find Rails bugs, I'm often like, okay, this is in my entire application. How can I boil this down to a base case? And then, like, what I end up doing is doing Rails new, and then, right, like, doing, like, setting up a reproduction of the issue, and then being like, here's an entire app,
right,
that, yeah, does this reproduction. But if you're telling me I can do like --dev and I'll get templates for doing this, or
sorry, I probably confused you about the two things. So --dev is basically what you're saying. So, like, it's basically generating new Rails app, but instead of using like the published gems, it would just like use the local checkout on your computer, so you can quickly change the, like, if you believe you found a bug in like active record, for example, you can quickly, you know, you can write the app and then generate the models, dependencies, or whatever, and then you can check that it's broken, and then you can change active record to fix your bug, and then try it again, now it's fixed. the templates is a different thing that lives in the guides folder, I believe. It's mm-hmm. like in the Rails repository, you go to guides, and then there's a folder called bug report templates. So those are free, single, self-contained, executable .rb files. And one of them, I believe it's the action controller bug report template. Mm-hmm. So that basically has a mini app set up in a single file that you can experiment with. So that's probably what you're looking
for. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out. Like, I feel that'll help me. Like, even in the libraries I maintain that are dependent on Rails, like, I could just create a version of that also load my libraries. And
yeah, I actually use that a lot even when I'm not following bug reports, or like, I just use that a lot to like test APIs or like experiment with stuff, try to, sometimes that's even faster than like looking things up for me. So I just take that and then write line of code and this does not work. Now I know.
Yeah, it might even be useful for like, I maintain Clearance, which is a Rails engine, it has to have like this Rails app in its test folder. Like, I'm wondering mm-hmm. if I could boil it down to just like, here's one file that's like only the parts I need. Like, it loads the parts of Rails I'm using, and it loads Clearance, and that's it, rather than having it spread across several different
definitely
files.
Definitely a very convenient thing to have around.
Yeah, I wish more people would use it, though.
Right. We've got to know about it now, so that's what we're doing. We're telling the people. We're bringing it to the people.
Yeah, we do need to do a better job, I think, of boiling down our contributing guidelines. Like, the contributing MD file is pretty barren, and nobody actually reads the entire contributing guide.
Yeah. Are there contributing guides for each part? Like, if I want to contribute to Active Record, is there like a contributing guide for just running the Active Record tests? And
there's a section of the contributing guide about that. Yeah, it's if you just go to guides.rubyonrails.org, there's a contributing to Ruby on Rails, and there's a section for Active Record. I think there's a section for Action Controller. Active Record would be the only one that would have really any setup to it.
Right.
I think what I struggle with on Active Record is like, by default when I run the test, it's like trying to do MySQL stuff. I'm like, no, I don't have that installed, and I don't want to have it installed. Well, actually, I do now, but. Ugh, I'm so sad.
Yeah. do test _ SQLite 3.
Okay. So there you go. So just like do the fastest test you want and then let Travis run the rest.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
I mean, in general,
It depends.
No, go ahead.
I'm not being Canadian. I guess it depends on like what you're working on, right? Like, if you're working on some things that is highly likely to break out of the database, like typecasting code, then you probably want to.
Right.
Like, it's a faster feedback loop, and like, it's also because that Travis is super slow for Rails because the test suite is pretty slow, and we test things very extensively, and we only have so many. I don't know what they call them, workers or containers.
Right. Slots. Yeah.
Well, and we have the super special, hidden, like not actually available, humongous number of workers, and it's still not enough.
Yeah.
Like, it's already on the like their new container infrastructure?
Yeah, we saw more than a 2x increase in our test speed when we switched to the new container infrastructure.
Yeah. So that's for people to know, Travis has like a, you basically just put sudo false into your, which is a really weird flag, but you're declaring that you're never going to run sudo, so you put that into your travis.yaml file, and then it'll spin up Docker instances for you. The tests start instantaneously and run, I don't know, a lot faster usually. There are some circumstances where they run slower. But
yeah, it's like you were saying, right? Normally you only need to run the SQLite 3 tests, most likely if you're touching something that isn't in a specific database adapter. You're unlikely to break something on PG but have it work on SQLite. Not always, but...
Right. I guess, like, it's not a big deal if you, like, just do that and then you push it up and, you know, Travis fail and then, like, I need to fix it and I'll submit that again. That's fine, right?
Yeah.
I guess just be slightly conscious of the fact that, like, the CI resource is constrained during certain hours of the day. But usually it's not a super big deal anymore compared to, like, a year ago because of various improvements that we have in the testing infrastructure.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. You also mentioned like that like you focus on a different level of bugs than like Aaron or Sean might focus on. And I think that's like it's super easy for me to like go and listen to Aaron's keynote, which we just did, and he's talking about like doing all this memory profiling and like stack profiling on different things. And I'm like, wow, this is a level I don't actually go to. And I think it's easy for people to look at that and be like, well, that's good for Aaron, but I guess I could never do that. But there's so much else you can do, even if you're not comfortable getting to that level, and maybe you will get there someday, but like, there's so much else you can do that's just like not at that level, just at the app level kind of concern.
Right, and I guess in terms of code contribution, which I don't do a whole lot these days. We can talk about that after. But in terms of code contribution, one of the things that I do the most is when we are close to releasing a new version, usually my job is to test the new version on Discourse, which is an open source.
Right, app. I saw you in that pull request. I think that's where I first interacted with you.
Right, so that's a pretty good way to contribute, right? Like, because there are other open source projects that's about the same complexity. The reason we do it is obviously we want to like make sure that the new version works with existing apps, and Discourse happened to be a pretty complex app that it's open source, but you probably have work apps, right?
Right, like even your own apps would be a great thing to try to just try on the beta, and you're gonna find something.
Yep.
Right, and possibly something nobody knows about, and you're gonna be able to like at least surface that bug and possibly fix it. So.
Yeah, I think during like beta and RC period, like I think we would much rather hear about something than nothing. So, like usually, if you have like a question kind of thing that might be like distracting on the issue tracker, but like if you're testing a new version of Rails and then something broke, right? Like, or something stopped working and you're unsure if you're doing something wrong or if it's Rails breaking something in your app, you should definitely ask that even if you don't plan on fixing that yourself. So that's right.
Surfacing issues is valuable as well. So.
Well, and a lot of times it can also be a change that we made thinking we'd considered all of the use cases, and you have a use case that we didn't consider. And if you test the beta or the RC and you report it during the beta or RC period, we are still able to make those kinds of changes. But if you wait until after we release the version to talk about this, well, now making that change is potentially like a breaking change. We just can't do it anymore.
Right.
That makes our lives a lot more difficult.
Yeah, so lesson off, like the more of the story is like basically test new versions of Rails as often as you can. I actually played around with setting up our CI to test against Rails Master, like in a work app every day. I never quite got that fully working, but the idea is I suppose you would have, like, you basically branch from master of your own app, and then, like, you would change the gem file to use Rails master, and then you would, like, run your tests and see what breaks, and, like, you can file those bugs, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's something that a lot of people can potentially do, because you, like, if it's work app, you're probably not using a CI resource, like, at midnight, right? Like, so if we can figure out an easy way that everyone can do that easily, then it would be a pretty good thing, and that's something that I have to go back to doing.
Yeah, I mean, that can be hard though, right? Especially with all the internal changes happening in Active Record and ARL, like if you have gems, even if the gem spec is loose enough that Bundler will even resolve it against master, you might also just have gems that flat out don't work because they're doing something internal.
Right, so yeah, there's definitely a lot of complexity involved. Like in some level, like at minimum, you can test against the latest of the stable branches.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Like, so that would be relatively easy to do, and even then that would be pretty helpful. So like basically just run all your tests against, like, instead of 4.2.1, run them against 4.2 stable, and that helps you as well, because like you know that when 4.2.2 comes out, you can just safely upgrade and like push it to production and nothing is gonna
But like as far as like what's on master now, right? So instead of working 4.2 stable, like if you wanted to point at master, how do I find out what, like, how do I know if what I'm hitting against is already known or not?
Filing an issue is probably, like, at the beginning, I guess you can just file issues, and then, like, over time, you would have better intuition.
You start to know what the
errors, I guess right now is a little bit more difficult because this is 4.2 going to 5,
right,
which has more breaking changes than usual. But if it's, like, 4.1 to 4.2, in theory, everything should be backwards compatible.
Right.
Sense deprecations, right? So
right,
if something suddenly stopped working, then we should at minimum be aware of it. And like if it's a duplication, then Raphael will probably quickly go in there and say this is a duplicate of that, and it's like see that ticket for blah blah blah. And most people in Rails team tend to be really brief on the issue tracker. That's because like there's some hassle. Yeah, it's like it's a lot of stuff to handle, right? Like so, like I don't think people intend to be like. Sometimes it might come across as like being mean because you're only saying like three words, right? But like I don't think you need to think about it that way. It's probably not the intention, and like so don't feel bad for like doing things like quote unquote wrong, or even like yeah, it's like in the contribution guide, but like I think ultimately we still prefer him on the tracker than not on the tracker, even though it's like the wrong thing.
When in doubt, just open an issue. If we need to close it for whatever reason, we'll close it for whatever reason.
Yeah,
cool.
You can always do a cursory search if you think it might be a duplicate, you know.
Right.
But don't feel like you have to be 100% certain nobody's ever raised anything even remotely like this before. Like, worst case, just open an issue.
Yep.
Cool. What else?
I don't know. It got noisy.
Yeah, it did. I think people are coming up to get ready for their talks. Get ready for the next round of talks. You got anything you want to plug?
We are planning to have a conference in Vancouver sometime later this year, but unfortunately details are still a little bit sparse, so if you might be interested in coming to Canada, the better part of Canada anyway, if you might be interested in doing that, then the best way to stay in the loop is to probably follow the Vancouver Ruby Twitter account, and we'll try to finalize the details as soon as possible and press the button.
What are the best parts of Canada?
Vancouver.
Just Vancouver?
Yeah.
Oh,
pretty
okay.
much.
All right.
I guess while the whole BC, which is where Vancouver is, and is pretty nice, like weather is relatively moderate compared to rest of Canada, and like we have beautiful sceneries and stuff like that.
All right. So we'll all come to the conference then, because it sounds delightful.
All right. We have one ticket sold. Thank you for buying our first ticket.
All right.
How's organizing the conference going?
It's unsurprisingly a lot of work. And it's a lot of different variables, right? Like, you have something in mind, and you start looking for, like, venues and stuff to match what you have in mind, and then you realize, oh, it doesn't match exactly, but if you change a little bit of constraints, then perhaps that will work, but if you change the constraints, then a lot of other options open up, and also a lot of other options closes at the same time, so it's a tricky thing to do, and like it's not like buying a plane ticket. You just look it up and you press a button and it's done, right? Like it's a lot of human interaction, and then you like send them an email, wait for a few days for a response, and then things changes during those 3 days. And
I'm trying to line up, I imagine, like other like exterior, like trying to line up like two exterior people to provide services together. Like you need to line up the food and the venue, and like
right,
getting
exactly.
that lined up, playing middleman a lot, and
yeah. Human interactions.
Maybe you should solve that problem by writing something that I can, like a button I can click on the internet.
Organize conference?
Do you want to organize a conference on this date? Yes. Do I want a venue and food? Yes.
Okay, I'm just imagining the elevator pitch for this. It's like Clippy, but for conferences.
Right.
All right. Anything else?
Do we have an episode yet, Tom?
We good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right.
Awesome.
Cool. Show notes for this episode can be found at bikeshed.fm/21.
Special thanks to our guest, Godfrey Chan.
Thank you for having me.
What's my other line?
Show ratings and reviews.
Oh, yeah. As always, ratings and reviews on iTunes are much appreciated.
If you need to give us some feedback or you want to get in touch for any other reason, you can email us at hosts@bikeshed.fm, or you can leave comments on any episode at bikeshed.fm.
Thanks for listening to the Bike Shed, and we'll see you next time.
Cool. We're done.
All right.